I'm Jason Rankin, and welcome to the Grass Track podcast, brought to you by AgResearch. We are bringing you the latest information, insights, and opinion to improve grazing management on your farm. This week, we are joined by David Patterson from AFBI to discuss the latest information from the Grass Track plots and farms, Robert Patterson from CAFRI, Josh Morton, a dairy farmer from County Armagh, and Greg Boyle, a sheep farmer from County Antrim. David, Robert, Josh and Greg, many thanks for joining us. You know, we're obviously meeting today here after a really extended period of quite horrific weather, perhaps one of the wettest springs we've ever encountered, and with ground conditions very challenging up until very recently. And we'll be discussing all of that later. So, I mean, David, while we know the weather conditions for grazing on our any field work have been atrocious, what's grass growth been like so far this year?
Yeah, despite those horrendous recent conditions, and I will try not to keep talking about that because no others will have lots to say. The grass growth this year so far, Jason, has been reasonably close, surprisingly, reasonably close to the 10-year average. Even just looking at this week's bulletin, which hasn't hit the press just yet, yes, we had slightly lower than average growth through early mid-April there, and then it kicked off and was actually above the 10-year average. So far, I'll not get into the forecast just yet, but so far it's been close to the 10-year average. But as we all know, it hasn't been about growing grass or having grass necessarily. It's been all about been able to even get onto the fields, whether for fertilizing or for grazing. So that's steady as she goes. Don't know if from a forecasting point of view, it's now really all about, I suppose, two things. As the soils right around the country slowly move away from being saturated to closer to ideal soil moisture conditions for growth, as that happens, now and over the next few weeks, all being well, I think after that, it's all about temperature. And unfortunately, the Met Office forecast, which factors into our growth forecast model, is quite pessimistic for air and ground temperatures over this next 7 and 14 days. Hence, the forecast this week right now is only 43 for the 7-day forecast and 54 for the 14-day forecast. Now, you don't need me to tell you, but that is way short of the 10-year average. So despite all that I said that so far, we're close to the 10-year average. If that forecast and critically those temperatures are correct in terms of the forecast, we are going to be in deficit, unfortunately.
And those forecasts, I imagine, are based on the full rate of fertilizer, which not every farmer will have had the opportunity to get out.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I'd missed that. Yeah. We are basing those on fertility conditions being optimal. You know, everything full up, charged up, ready to grow grass. I'm just looking at the chart. The average for late April into early May hovers in around the 65 to 70. And like I said, forecast is between 40 and 55, unfortunately.
Grass quality has been fairly good at the start of the season. Has that quality been, is that quality being maintained?
Yeah, and I think that's another good news story and amongst all the negativity. The MEs is what the ME is the first thing I look at. ME and crude protein as well, for that matter, have been relatively good through March and April. Any of the on-farms samples that we've processed, 11, the occasional 12 ME, but mostly in the 11s, and crude protein hovering in around mid to high teens, which can only improve as fertilizer, first of all, gets applied, or in some cases, fertilizer that has been applied starts to take effect and the grass growth, the grass tissue takes that up.
Robert, this has been an exceptional year in terms of weather conditions with high covers and poor ground conditions. Now that the weather is improving, how do farmers start to get back control of the grass situation on their farm?
Yeah, as you said, Jason, a very, very difficult spring. And I suppose what we're seeing out around the country is that the farms are mainly in two categories. So the first category being farmers who haven't really had any significant amount of grazing done, especially up until the week beginning the 15th of April. And then the second category, maybe farmers that had to go out with stock, they are well around the first rotation. They have done quite a bit of sward damage. Utilization has been very low, and poor residuals as well. So I suppose for both categories going forward, measuring is the first thing we need to emphasize. And going out with a plate meter has been very demoralizing or unattractive probably over this past 5 to 6 weeks. But as we get into this growth period of the season, we need to be getting back into the weekly measuring, especially with some of those first rotation covers that haven't been grazed yet. They can be particularly deceiving. They've sort of gone off colour a bit, and you sort of think there's maybe not a lot of grass there until you start walking through them and measuring, and some of them potentially getting up into high 3,000s into 4,000s now. So yeah, get out and measure. That's the first thing. Everybody needs to know how much they have and what their demand is, and especially as David said, with the growth maybe not being where it normally will be, maybe that could be a blessing in disguise for some farmers to be able to try and get back on top of their grazing. But the big priority then is trying to get a grazing wage established, especially for those who haven't been able to get out yet, as they could be going out to fairly high average farm covers with very little variation in the sward. So I suppose in that situation, look, those farmers need to target grazing the lower covers, as this is going to get a greater area grazed per day. Potentially looking at all available stock that could be put out, maybe in a dairy situation, putting heifers onto the milking cow platform for 10 days or 2 weeks just to try and get around it a bit quicker. And then if there is a surplus, you know, skipping those higher covers and looking at trying to remove some of those surplus, if a surplus exists, ideally on a fairly regular basis, maybe 3 or 4 paddocks a week, because our risk now at this stage is that while grazing might be okay for the next 10 days, it's where we go after that. We could run into a deficit very quickly. We could go out and get very bogged down in high covers now and have nothing coming on for grazing in 2 weeks' time. So that's sort of the issue there. For those who are around the first rotation, a lot of damage occurred. I suppose that they need to be looking to the second rotation if there's anywhere from 2,700 to 2,900 on 3 or 4 paddocks. But the real risk here is that because there has been damage caused before, we need to be really careful about the grazing conditions and that second grazing on those paddocks. So ideally, if we are getting dry days like we're having for this past number of days here, thankfully, getting onto those paddocks in dry conditions and being very careful about front fence and back fence and allocations to try and limit damage in those and potentially revert back to paddocks left in the first rotation on wetter days.
Thank you very much. Robert, Josh, coming to you next. I mean, I always dread to ask this, but how is the grazing season gone for you so far?
Challenging would be the word. We did get out for 10 days at the end of February, start of March. And then since then, we know what has happened. It's just been raining. So they are coming back nice for second round. I've started grazing them. The last couple of days, took a couple of paddocks out because, as Robert was saying, covers are getting strong and pre-grazing and residuals was leaving far too much, and then your second round is going to be a mess. So took 3 paddocks out to speed the first round up and back into the second round, and hopefully we'll get a nice wedge from there.
So in terms of what's the current kind of grass situation on your farm there, Josh, well, you're now in the second round, which you're kind
of so covered. The last couple of days. So average APC is 2,490. So a wee bit still on the high side, but as predicted growth is and might not be there, we don't want to go too low in that yet at all. Pre-graze is 3-1 at the minute, which is probably a little bit high for the end of April, but it is where we are. It's not the end of the world having a high cover at the minute, but if growths do take off, we can take a paddock out for bales again. You know, we'll the plan is the next 2 weeks to monitor that and see where we are going forward.
And in terms of your kind of fertilizer application, has that been affected this year so far?
Lucky enough, I got on at the first couple of weeks of March and got on with the protected urea for 50 units. So I'm fully, as you would say, fully loaded in at the minute. Probably following on from now, we'll go with 30, you know, and that hasn't been done yet, but with the maybe a wee bit of rain forecast this weekend, we'll probably go out with that.
And in terms of, I mean, with the cows, so you said you got out for a little bit in March,
yes.
and then you had to pull them back in for a while.
Yeah, which wasn't ideal. We're a 120 cow spring calving unit here, so it was a little bit frustrating with intakes and stuff like that, but back on the silage and full winter ration again for them 5 weeks. The body condition scoring probably isn't too bad because cows were fully fed, and I didn't go out and try and do the 3 hours because I'm on my own. I went back into winter mode and kept them inside. So grass probably affected a little bit of quality, you know, but and feed going in the cows, but going forward now, I think we're in a good place with what we've done. You know, we haven't damaged too many paddocks, and yeah, any strong covers, we'll just take them out for bales if that happens.
Okay, Josh, thank you very much. Greg, moving on to you. You've obviously been busy the last while lambing a lot of sheep, but how's the grazing season gone for you so far, and how have you coped with this year?
It was frustrating would be the main word, all right. We would have an out farm as well, and we sent our ewes with singles up there. We would graze it very tightly. So that's managing okay. They'd be getting into tight covers of 1,700 or 1,800 and coming out the next day or whatever, 1,600 odd. But at home, it's nearly the opposite. We put the ewes with twins out at home. We kind of spread them over the farm as much as possible at the start. And we're just gradually tightening them up now. We've had them in three groups now, in three fields. And possibly this next week or so, we'll tighten them up again and get the fences out into the paddocks. But it's grounds at home, they begin into higher covers. Some actually, one last week, we tightened them up into covers of, it was above 3,500. So it's probably too high, to be honest, but we'll put them in and they're grazing it down very quick. But it looks as though, you know, you can see the stemmy stuff at the bottom there coming now. So it'll probably be hard to graze out. But it's also given a lot of mastitis in the sheep as well. You know, they've got wet and probably poor dry matter intake. So it's led to a lot of mastitis, especially at home with the ewes and twins. The ewes and singles have been okay so far, but the ewes and twins have quite a bit of them status.
Understandable given the conditions. So in terms of your current conditions on the farm, have you got your average cover under control? Do you think, you know, growth and demand will be evenly matched the next while, or have you any concerns about either too much or too little grass?
Probably the last field went into there with the big lot, there was probably a bit too much, but we'll just gradually manage it to and get into paddocks next week, hopefully, and take it from there. And any surpluses, we'll either take them off as bales, or we would usually top it. We have an old mower we usually top it with, which is good for, I believe it's good for the clover as well. You know, lets the light into the clover and gets rid of that stem material. So brings on the better quality grass the next round.
So, Greg, you've been making a conscious effort over the last few years to bring clover into your swards. How's that gone for you, and have you been able to kind of reduce your fertilizer application as a result?
Yes, we reseeded a field there in August 21, and it came quite successful with the clover. And even more so last year, we were measuring, obviously, with AgriNet, and it turned out we actually had ordered fertilizer for the grazing ground, but it turned out with, you know, I could see from the software that on the wedge that we didn't need any fertilizer or didn't need to sow it on the grazing ground. So we managed to do without any in the grazing ground altogether, which obviously helps economics, obviously.
Absolutely.
And carbon footprint as well, which is usually a big factor. We just had the DERA advisor out yesterday. She was mentioning that usually people would be in the red for fertilizer usage, but we're in the green, so helps there. We had, with a combination of no fertilizer on it and May, June time, generally after most rotations, we would top it with the mower, which I think helps the clover a lot. We actually ended up with one paddock with too much clover. So we'll hope to do more reseeding again and use that.
Okay, thank you. So looking forward, what do you think are the key actions you'd be taking with regard to kind of grass sand management over the next couple of weeks, Greg?
We'll probably getting our paddocks fenced off and just using the software to decide again what to do, whether to take out any surplus or maybe to move into silage ground. If we close off silage ground, we can move into it if there's a shortage.
Robert, many farmers obviously at the moment are in the unfortunate predicament of having full slurry tanks, but perhaps lots of grass everywhere. What are the options for those farmers?
Yeah, Jason, as you said, slurry is quite an issue on a lot of farms at the minute. And in hindsight, those who were forced to spread at the start of February are the ones who are best off now because conditions never really improved. High grass covers and slurry applications aren't really a great combination in any circumstance. And at this stage, as we approach first cut silage harvesting dates, it's going to pose even more of an issue. So look, every farm's going to be different. The amount of animals still left in the sheds is going to affect how big an issue this is. But you know, ideally, if there are surplus paddocks being harvested there that are coming out of the grazing round, if there's different types of slurry and there's more dilute slurry that could be targeted to those, sort of 2,000 gallons to the acre, hopefully that's not going to have too big an impact on the next grazing of those paddocks, and try and ride out the storm until first cut is harvested and you know, a larger volume of slurry can be moved. But really, it doesn't really matter what type of spreading method you're using going out onto high covers of 4,000 with large applications of slurry isn't going to be a great option.
And Robert, also many farmers may only be getting up fertilizer onto paddocks now that conditions have improved. Assuming that they're planning to do a first cut as usual in mid-May, how much fertilizer should they spread?
There are farmers out there like Josh who got the odd opportunity throughout the spring there. But yes, for those who haven't got any out, I suppose we'll split it into grazing paddocks and silage ground. For grazing paddocks, yes, go on ahead when the conditions are right, especially with those lower covers. Those higher covers that are maybe going to be grazed within the next week, you know, perhaps hold off just until those are grazed and then go on at that stage. In terms of silage, you know, grass heading date isn't going to vary significantly based on the amount of nutrients it's got. So, you know, mid-May, you're probably still not going to want to go past that date in terms of quality and affecting your subsequent cuts throughout the year. So it's going to be a case of dialing back the nitrogen application on those accordingly. So if we look at ideal growing conditions with sun and moisture and all the right temperature, we're looking at a maximum of 2.5 kilos of nitrogen per hectare per day. The other thing to consider about those silage swards, potentially if they haven't received slurry, there's going to be a P and a K demand there as well, which if they don't get some source of, could affect yields even further. So potentially looking at going on with a compound fertilizer at this stage at a reduced rate instead of just the straight nitrogen. The other thing to think about is just the amount of nitrogen going out onto paddocks. I would try and avoid this idea of catching up with nitrogen applications in paddocks, because this could lead to elevated levels of nitrates in the grass, which is going to have implications on rumen efficiency, potentially fertility, and your nitrogen use efficiency. So I suppose the little and often approach is still going to be best, rather than trying to catch up with a big application of nitrogen.
Thank you, Robert. David, some farmers might be wanting to go to silage earlier in order to reset and get fertilizer story applied to clean ground. And indeed, in recent days, we've seen quite a lot of grass cut. What should farmers watch out for if cutting early?
The one problem I can think of there is that if the emerging seed head literally hasn't got far enough up through the stem, and if a cut is taken today, for example, and depending on the varieties in the original seed mixture used, not enough of those emerging seed heads will be removed. Consequently, you could have a second cut that comes through with an extra high proportion of seed heads, have a depressant effect on the ME and the quality of the second cut silage. So it's as usual, it's getting that biting point between bulk and maturity, but not going too early in case you simply have a penalty of seed heads in the second cut. Just to add in there to what Robert was saying about typical silage cutting dates, they won't vary a great deal. So, I mean, I couldn't emphasize enough that the cutting back proportionately the amount of nitrogen that you apply now that ground conditions have firmed up on silage ground, because, you know, grass variety maturity dates are determined first of all by day length, which doesn't, you know, we can't control that, and temperature second of all. And there might be a bit of a cool spell coming, but between now and silage time, temperatures will probably recover near enough to seasonal average, and you will have grasses maturing usually within a week of their official heading date, you know, every year. It doesn't vary a great deal. Just picking up there on what Greg was saying about clover.
Yeah.
I'm not going to hide the fact I'm a clover enthusiast as well, but on our clover check plot, so I was just looking at some numbers this morning there, and it's interesting, when I compared the clover, we've got two sets of clover check plots, clover zero nitrogen and clover 67 kilos of nitrogen. And we've got three rates of nitrogen on the grass only plots, 67, 135 and 270. So far, the clover zero and clover 67 plots, week by week, you know, right through March, right through the first 3 weeks of April, have been on a par with the grass plus fertilizer plots. And it's only in this last week, literally, from the 15th of April to the 22nd, where I can see the grass plus high fertilizer, the 270 rate, starting to stretch out beyond the grass clover growth rate, as you might expect. You know, these are plots, not paddocks, and they're getting every opportunity to perform. So I would expect the high rate of nitrogen grass only plots to start pulling ahead, but it has only happened in this last week.
Oh, that's really interesting, David. I think it does just show the potential of clover, and I think it was great to hear from Greg, just, you know, by that, you know, a good clover sword, you know, he really didn't feel he needed any nitrogen last year at all. And I think for some of those guys who have been making a success of clover, and it's not easy, I think the rewards are great. Josh, come in there. Yes.
Just a question for David. On the clover plus F nitrogen, what is their sowing dates for fertilizer on that plot, or when is the optimum time to sow fertilizer if you have clover in your plot?
The clover 67 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per season, over half of that is applied What I'm trying to say, it's very much orientated towards spring, and there's a bit of a literally spoon feeding of maybe, I can't remember the actual numbers, but I think it's maybe only 5 kilograms of nitrogen in subsequent rotations. So out of the 67, roughly speaking, maybe 45 of that would already have been spread by the end of April. In other words, what we're trying to do there is put nitrogen on as a substitute for biological nitrogen to fuel grass growth and then get it grazed off.
Yeah.
Because what we don't want is growing a whole pile of grass to overshadow the clover, and then that just leads to a clover decline. So put the fuel in, that'll grow grass. It'll also grow a bit of clover, I should say, but it'll grow mostly grass, get that cut or grazed off, and then allow the clover to do its work through the rest of the season.
That's it for this episode of the Grass Check Podcast. And my thanks to David Patterson from AFBE, Robert Patterson from CAFRI, and Josh Morton and Gregor Boyle for joining us. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. You can listen on Apple and Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. For more information, you can go to the Grass Check website, www.agresearch.org/grasscheck, and the Grass Check social media channels. I'm Jason Rankin, and join us the next time, the Grass Check Podcast. Until then, stay safe.